it's really about who can sort of minimize the mistakes and make the least amount of mistakes and just sail a really smart series.
For the best Olympics coverage, subscribe to the OTB Highlights podcast feed on the OTB Sports app now.
Matt, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. Very good, mate. Very good.
Owen thinks we should be magnanimous and walk away and shake hands and go, okay, that's just a thing that happened over the last 3 weeks. I think that what happened is that fundamentally, the game of rugby has been changed by the attitude of Razzy Rasmus, where it is now open season on referees. You can say what you like about them. You can condition them pre-match. You can talk about them afterwards. You can release a video that you know full well is going to go public. And that's now the rules of engagement for international coaches, unless something is done to put the genie back in the box. And I think this is a big, big moment for the game.
I'd agree with a lot of what you just said, Ger, and I think this series has really put out there for all the rugby people something I've been banging on about for a long time, and that's world rugby are asleep at the wheel with our game. And on a number of fronts. This series has shown it on a number of fronts. Now, I agree with you absolutely that what has been said by Razzy Rasmus and to a lesser degree by Gatlin regarding our officials and officiating is completely out of order. But World Rugby should have stepped in immediately and sanctioned Gatlin, and I don't think we would have had the Razzy Rasmus thing, but to delay Razzy Rasmus one, which was 10 times more voracious than Gatlin's, was just outright wrong. And it left our officials swinging in the wind. And they were two young Australian referees in Test 1 and Test 2. They're not, as I've said on the show here before, not particularly great referees. They're young referees. I was very surprised when they got the series. But they were just left to be completely intimidated in front of the world's rugby media. And that was wrong by World Rugby. They should have sanctioned both of them. I think the sanctions will come. And I think this will change the way that officials and officiating is dealt with by the coaches. And I think these two teams have let down World Rugby. There's no doubt about that. We just saw Australia and New Zealand play in Eden Park on the weekend in the 9 o'clock in the morning. We were watching it here before the 6 o'clock game against the Lions. There was none of that. To put this in perspective, though, Jer, what you saw Razzy do on the video might have been quite shocking to the public. But that happens every week, the week of a test match. Every international coach comes armed with clips and talks face-to-face, usually pre-COVID, with the officials for that game that weekend and asks those hard questions, has those hard chats. And the referees are not intimidated by that. You sit down with, you know, I remember doing something slightly similar, you know, with Stuart Dickinson, who is an Australian referee that refereed when I was coaching Scotland. And, you know, they're not intimidated by this. They just talk about it. They express their opinion. And listen, they're as equally forceful back. If your guys do this, I'm going to ping them. So that is done weekly. What is never done is you never talk about it in public. You never do your talking to the referee via the media or to the officials via the media. And that's what both Gatlin and Rasmus did. Now, Rasmus went nuclear, did it to a degree much far greater than Gatty did. But both were out of order completely. And World Rugby then topped it off by not coming down on both of them like a ton of bricks and telling them to pull their heads in and giving them some sanction that was visible to the rest of the coaches and the rest of the rugby community around the world. Now, fortunately, as I said, the next big game we saw, the Bledisloe Cup game, we didn't have any of that. And there was a great deal of respect showing for the officials. Remember, there was a New Zealand official refereeing that game. So there was all the chance of saying it's biased and all this, but we're in COVID, you can't do anything about that. So I don't think the game is ruined, but I think this series did certainly no favours for rugby, brought it, in many ways, brought it into disrepute.
So what kind of sanction for both Rasmus and for Gatlin would prevent other coaches around the world looking at that and going, that's the new normal, I can get away with this?
Well, that's a tough question, Joe. Look, I think like any people involved with with any of the games they love. I heard you talking about the Olympics and the Cork hurling team. And, you know, if you're told as a coach, manager, or player, you can't be involved for a certain number of weeks, that's a huge punishment. You know, that's the sanction. So they need to say, right, you can't be on the sideline, you can't be at the stadium for the next few weeks. And there might be some sort of financial punishment involved as well. Emotions run very high, and look, I certainly can't point the finger at other people. It's a very emotional game, and you're in it up to your gills. You're doing things that people don't see. It's 18, 20-hour days every day of the week, 7 days a week, and the pressure on you is enormous. And occasionally people make mistakes. And look, I believe that both Gatlin and Erasmus made very bad mistakes. I think they'll both regret what they did, but they did it under the intense pressure of that environment. Now, the difference between a coach and a player making a mistake, a player has a split second to make a decision, and he might get his shoulder in the wrong place and he is sanctioned for that. Now, that is very different to a coach that, you know, you are in control of your words. And when your words come out, and especially in Erasmus' case where it was obviously premeditated, he taped and recorded his Zoom meetings with the officials and then released it to the public. I think that's a totally separate level. And again, it's something we've never seen in the world.
Yeah.
And I certainly hope we don't see it again.
I don't think he's going to regret it. I think that, like, you've seen the outpouring from South African rugby fans saying, yeah, that's our coach. That's what we want. He said what we've been thinking for years. There's been this mad conspiracy against South African rugby. You know, 27 out of the 28 things he said were correct. How can anybody have any issues with it? That's the sort of stuff that I've been seeing, not just from fans, but from former and current South African players and media online. It's like he's now become this hero figure, a messiah who has led them to the promised land of a World Cup and now a Lions Test victory. I think for Razzie, that worked and that was calculated. And I would make them favourites for the next World Cup on the basis of that.
Well mate, you're right. He did a bit of a Donald Trump. He outraged a certain part of the rugby community, none of whom are voting for him. he knows his constituents, and he was talking to his constituents like Donald Trump did. So the world is in outrage. The South Africans have believed, you know, that they don't recognise New Zealand winning that first World Cup in 87 because the South Africans weren't there. They were still in isolation. Or in 91 when the Wallabies won it. They believe the World Cup started in 95 when they arrived and won it in Joburg. So, look, you can't worry about the lowest common denominator, Joe. I'm not trying to be aloof or anything. I'm talking about world rugby. You've got to have standards. People are going to believe what they want. But that was wrong. The style of game was wrong. And here again, world rugby's been asleep at the wheel. We have not had significant interventions by our legislators in changing so many desperately needed laws that are antiquated, no longer fit for use, that need to be moved, and new laws need to be introduced, need to support our officials in other way. All of those things came to the fore in that Lions Test match. It was turgid tests. It was the third test was a little bit better, but it was a horrid series. Now, there's no other way to describe that. That has been building for the best part of two decades. World rugby has been is this giant political ball, a bit like of the Olympic movement on steroids, because they just can't make decisions because people are worried. The politicians, and we have too many politicians and not enough statesmen, are highly concerned that if they change a law, it's going to disadvantage their country. It's going to disadvantage England. It's going to disadvantage Ireland. Instead of looking at the game, what's good for our game? And they're just not doing that. They're not looking what's good for the game. They're looking what's good for Europe, what's good for Australia, what's good for New Zealand. And then everyone has conspiracy theories. The North thinks the South's trying to get an advantage. You know, the South Africans think everyone's trying to get an advantage over it. So we get this gridlock of change of laws. And what happens? You get this physicality, this kick-a-thon, this lack of skill. We waited, I got it written down here, we waited to the 56th minute of the third test until we saw the absolute brilliance of Chislin Colby. Now, he also played in the A game. So that's four games the South Africa game and the three tests. We waited the 56th minute of that last game of four games till Chislin Colby got the ball in his hands with a little bit of space. And the world said, wow, and that's what we've got to have. We've got to have more of that. We can't take away the physicality. Our game, that's the beauty of our game. But it's completely out of proportion at the moment. And the only way to change that is legislation. Coaches in every sport, hurling, football, soccer, you name it, they look at the laws and they use the laws like a good tax lawyer to maximise their profit for their team, for their talent. And South Africa have followed that same plan since 95. You go back and watch the games, it's hard, their game plan hardly changes because they use the laws as they are. And until we change the laws to get more space between teams, that the scrum is not a time waster and that everyone's scrummaging for penalties, where the maul is not this ridiculous thing that just keeps going and going and going every time, we're going to get more games like that. And that's to me, the game really is in a point of crisis, in my opinion, because of our failings of world rugby. And they were, that tournament just showed it.
And that's an interesting point, Matt, because it kind of feels to me as if there is a lot of finger pointing at South Africa, as if almost that we're in crisis because of South Africa, where to me there is a lot of what happened over the past couple of weeks, which is the reality of rugby, whether it's the laws of the game, as you mentioned there, or even with Razzie Erasmus's video. As you say, that sort of stuff goes on behind closed doors every week. I don't think a lot of people were overly aware of just how in-depth some of those videos or some of those messages may actually have been. And now Razzie Erasmus has sort of shown us all how in-depth those conversations can actually be, that these were all pre-existing conditions that South Africa have just kind of shown up again rather than them being the creators of, is kind of how I'm looking at it.
I'd agree with that. Like, it's, to me, the content of what Razzie put out, like, I didn't think twice about it, to be honest with you. And I agree. I thought most of his points were valid. And I think, the Northern Hemisphere didn't react well to the truth of that video. So there's two separate issues. Was there a lot of truth in the video? Absolutely. There should have been three Lions players in the first test given yellow cards. You know, two almost red cards. Curry and Watson were very close to red cards. And, you know, everyone's talking about the other two. What Curry did in the scrum, so people remember, he broke from the scrum and the tight head prop is pushing. He's got his seven other guys pushing with him. And Curry lifted his outside leg. Like, you can make someone a quadriplegic doing that. Like, that's an appalling act. I was aghast when I saw it in the game. It was no one even penalised. I could not believe that. Now, so many of those points that Razzie showed were right. So that's one aspect. So let's put that aside. There is no way on God's green earth Razzie should release that to the public. So you've got two separate issues here. To the people in the rugby community that coach at elite level, see, I'm not sure now, I've been out of the European coaching scene for a number of years as far as being on the hands-on. We would ring up the referees, we would ask permission, can we have a talk, we've got some concerns, we'd go through it and we'd send them some clips, or if they arrived in your city, because an independent referee for a Heineken Cup, we'd go and meet with them. And like, that's 25 years ago. We were doing that in Super Rugby at the beginning of professional rugby in 1996. So none of this, it's a quarter of a century old. Like, it's nothing bad about it at all. But putting it out was. The way the South Africans played, they exploited the laws as they stand. They did not do anything illegal. They exploited the laws. And they did it magnificently. They used to maximise the talent at their disposal. But that, the way the game is now, it is discriminating against the really creative attackers like Chislin Colby, like Watson, we saw Hogg, who was absolutely outstanding in the Six Nations as a counter-attacker, get no chance to counter-attack. So he's dropped from the team. So the world is robbed from that change. It's a bit like watching the New Zealand side on the weekend in a really open and positive game of rugby, having someone like McKenzie, who's their little blonde-headed fullback, is a very slight man. The world is robbed from seeing his attacking genius. And that is not what our game is. Our game is a contest for all shapes and sizes. You have tiny little blokes like Aaron Smith, who's the New Zealand scrum half, and you have the giant guys in the second row like Brodie Retallick. Every shape and size human being has a place in rugby. That's the beauty of our game, and it's a contest, and it has to have a yin and yang, and that yin and yang is completely out of balance at the moment.
Can I ask you about Gatland's performance? The Telegraph are suggesting that he's in the running for the gig in 4 years' time. And I'm like, really? Is that going to happen again? Is it a job for life? Is that how this works? What was his performance like over the whole piece? Let's leave the criticising the referees apart. From a pure rugby perspective, from knowing what your team wants to do, how did he get on?
Oh, gee, I've got to say something against Gatty, who I respect deeply, but look, we're all human and we all make mistakes. The biggest influence a coach has on a game, the biggest influence, is the players he selects. And I think from the very day that this squad was announced back in May, the selection of the team and the squad did not match up with the on-field tactics. At the original selection, there were zero specialist outside centres selected in that side. Like, it's madness. I haven't seen any squad in the modern era around the world in the last 25 years that didn't have specialist outside centres. And I looked at it and I just shook my head. And the fact that they played three different outside centres in the three tests tells you that they got it wrong. They also wanted to play a game to get to the wide channels. You could see that in the lead-up games, and you could see it in the third test. They were trying to do it there. And then they selected Dan Bigger at 10, who had no chance of getting the ball into the wide channels. Not his game. He's a fine footballer and a fine player, but that the selection didn't match the tactics. The biggest piece of luck they got was Bigger got hurt and Finn Russell came on, and they were in that game. And we saw the ball get wider. We saw the ball get moved there. Now, I had questioned whether Finn Russell could win a game. Definitely knew he could win a game, but he could lose your game as well. They didn't recognise that early enough. They finally put him on the bench for the last game of the tour. He was fortunate, came on and could have changed the series. So the selection did not match the way the game needed to be played to beat South Africa. We look at the mirror image of that. Mornay Steyn on the bench for the last game comes out and wins it. They got their selections right every single time. You've got to give the South Africans credit. It was negative. It was physical. It was not particularly pretty. They had Am at outside centre, who was almost a player of the series, in my opinion. He was absolutely outstanding. And they got their pack and everything right. There was a few wobbles in the first test, but they got their game plan and their selection to match. Gatty didn't get his selections and his game plan matching at all. Should he be the guy for the next tour? Well, you know, I don't even know if they've landed back. They landed this morning back in the Northern Hemisphere. I don't know. It's too early to say that, from my opinion. Whether the Telegraph wants to talk about it or not, I think there's a lot of water to move under a bridge before that occurs.
Does the direction in which rugby is travelling, as you've already outlined, tell us why Finn Russell wasn't selected earlier?
No, I don't think so, Tommy. It's not quite as simple as that. Finn's own performances lead me to say that. I love watching him play. He is brilliant. And you can see him after the game, the very last act of the game. Mornay Steyn taps the ball and kicks out. Finn Russell comes through, sprints through, try and charge it down, fails to charge it down, and just puts his arm around Mornay Steyn and smiles, laughs, pats him on the chest. Great sportsmanship. And he that's the way he plays the game. He plays the game with a smile on his face. You see he comes on, has a smile on his face. But that can lead him to do things that are quite unnecessary and are not good at game management or what the team requires. He got sin-binned in the Six Nations for tripping. He, in the last second after his Scottish team, had tried absolutely heroically to lead England at Twickenham and were well in front with a few seconds to go. He took a ridiculous shot at drop goal that was just not needed and killed a few worms on the way through. That was it, and gave England the ball back with seconds to go. Things like that put questions in coaches' minds. Can this guy be trusted to take us through a Lions test? Now, I had questions in my mind, but I'm not with the guy every day on tour. Surely they must have seen something in what he was doing and a change on tour, because Lions tours change players. Players come back from Lions tour, different people and different players, because they're in such an incredible environment surrounded by so much talent. And I could see Finn Russell's goal kicking change. I question him on the bench saying, look, I mean, he's only a part-time goal kicker at best. I wouldn't want him to win a test match. Give the guy credit. He came out and kicked magnificently. Now, he's obviously had a lot of time on that tour to spend practicing, and it was quite incredible. And when he played, his goal kicking, that was, when he came on, I thought he played really, really well, and he gave the Lions a different dimension. Now, he should take that back for Scotland and wipe out that flakiness of tripping and just it's not a game of touch in the backyard. It's a test match, and you're a 10, you got responsibility. And I thought he showed that on Saturday. I thought he really showed a lot of maturity that I hadn't seen from him in the last 4 or 5 years. You know, the whole thing about having a pint and being sent home, and I'm not talking to him. I mean, really? Like, if you're under 12s with doing that, you'd have a serious talk to them. I'm not talking to him because I'm a man, I'm allowed to have a beer. Like, come on, Finn, yeah, let's grow up. It's international rugby. And I thought he did grow up on the weekend.
Yeah. Matt, been great having you along the ride for the duration of the Test Series. Who knows what the future of the game is? We're all a little bit worried about it, but I think you've articulated it brilliantly for us this morning. Cheers.
Pleasure, Joe. Thanks, Tommy. See you now.
It's really about who can sort of minimise the mistakes and make the least amount of mistakes and just sail a really smart series.
For the best Olympics coverage, subscribe to the OTB Highlights podcast feed on the OTB Sports app now.